everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm your host, Eric Quanstrom, the CMO at Cyence. Today's episode, you ever waited a while to have somebody on, a guest that you totally respect and that really kind of brings it? Well, wait no longer, because that person, Matt Bertuzzi from The Bridge Group, is our guest today. So one of the things that we do on this podcast, and I almost can't wait to get to it, is we start to crack into the sales development survey and report that The Bridge Group produces and puts out every other year. They've been doing this since 2007. By the way, that's been Matt's time with the company. You know, he's been there 15 years. He's overseen every one of the surveys that's gone out and that really have shaped our industry. So this is an authoritative source on how companies are structuring their SDR programs, the best practices, if you will, the numbers, the benchmarks that, frankly, you can take this episode and measure your own team against. You can take this survey and you can start to really make some meaningful kind of inferences as to where am I? Like, how do I measure up? How does my SDR team measure up? We talk a lot about the SDR role, how it's evolved, what the standards are now. We talk about activity levels and all the things that are in the report itself. And so this is just a power-packed episode with Matt providing some tremendous insights and color around what, again, is for my money, one of the best and most authoritative reports in our industry. So without further ado, here's Matt Bertuzzi from The Bridge Group. And we're back with Matt Bertuzzi of The Bridge Group. And if there's anyone listening to this podcast that isn't familiar with The Bridge Group, I might be mildly surprised.
That's too nice.
It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much.
With the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast. That said, would you mind just providing kind of that intro, that centering, that context around who The Bridge Group is and what you guys do?
Sure. So we are a Boston-based, actually, we have offices, we have people in the Bay Area and Denver and North Carolina and Texas, but we are a consulting group. We used to be called Inside Sales Consultants when everything was inside sales to differentiate it from non-inside sales. You know, pre-COVID, people didn't used to sell a lot over the phone. They like to be face-to-face. So we started to really focus on what was then called the BDR role, now kind of generally called the SDR role, as well as AMs, AEs, obviously, and CSMs to some degree, really around strategy, tools, kind of, we think of like models, metrics, and motions. That's what we help you with, either not doing, but helping you build a team or enable the team with sales playbooks, or just kind of benchmark you. How's your team performing?
So valuable. And I've heard nothing but good things from your clients and the work that you do along those lines. And speaking of which, you know, we're really lucky here on this particular podcast, because you guys produce, amongst other reports, one that is frankly foundational to us here at Cyence, called the Sales Development Biennial Report. So in other words, it comes out every other year, and you've been doing it since 2007. You were the guy who started it, right?
Yeah, yes. And I wish I could say it was my idea, but we were very early on introduced to the folks at HubSpot. They're a Boston-based company. We're a Boston-based company. And they had this idea of, I don't even think it was called inbound then. It was just the idea of like, what if you talked to your customers and figured out what they were asking and then asked them all the same question, wrote it up and shared it? Maybe people who weren't your customers would like to take a look at it. And we sat back and were like, oh, that's a really good idea. So we tried it. I actually looked at the 2007 version. It's like, I'm glad it's scrubbed from the internet. It's embarrassing. I mean, anything you've been doing for 15 years, like, you should be embarrassed by it. You should have gotten better. But those are really embarrassing, just in like the look, and the worst part to me is the math. Like my ability to do the math was worse. Thanks to Khan Academy for helping me do like to really get a foundation of statistics. I'm a lot better at math now, a lot more able to do, you know, t-tests and z-scores and figure out what statistical significance means, that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was the idea. And we said, all right, HubSpot, let's see how this goes. And we kind of ran with it ever since.
Well, these days you can, much different than 07, you can hit ChatGPT for checking all of your math. And
right. For sure.
On the next release. So let's dive into this year's report, which, you know, there was a little bit of a hippity hop in COVID times and during the pandemic, but I think everything's kind of like back on course. So the report is a survey.
Yes.
And that's where the original research is coming from, is those survey respondents. And ultimately, you had a pretty wide cross-section, but tell me about kind of like who participated.
Sure. So 366 execs responded. I don't know who they are by name. For anonymity is important. People need to be honest. I can't figure out who they are. So they could be, if you have three, you know, if you have a APAC, EMEA, and US sales development leader, that's one company. That might be three respondents, or it might be one respondent. It could be that global head, or it could be just the US. So I don't know where they sit, but I know they kind of match the market, right? There's ACV is all over the place, annual contract value.
Yep.
Where very few are under 5 or 10K, as you might expect. It's tough to make the unit economics work for sales development there. And then not a ton of people sell $500,000 ACV SaaS software or technology. So you have a good swath between that kind of 10 to maybe 250,000 ACV. Vast majority are either global companies, that's how they describe themselves, or North America based. So that's probably something like 85-90% of respondents. And then not a ton of startups, because they generally don't have that many SDRs when you're below 5 million. But good representation in those, you know, 5 to 20 tier, 20 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 up kind of thing.
Yeah, I was one of the 366 respondents. So I just unmasked myself.
I guess. Like, I don't know your row, so you're safe.
Fair enough. And I think the other normalizer that's kind of interesting and will be a nice little kind of context setter for the listeners is, you know, average company, if you will, that took the survey, right around $45 million in revenues. And right. Then that median average sales price or selling price is right around 52K.
So that's like 4,000 a month if you think an MRR, which is good size deal, right in the sweet spot for having sales development on the front end.
What's also really interesting is you took all of those responses, and we'll probably refer to this over the next few minutes, and group them by their own company's growth. Mm. So those three groups, high growth, mid-range, laggard.
Right. So the logic behind it is people always kind of want to know, well, what are the best companies doing? And what does best mean? Right. I mean, Salesforce is the biggest. Are they the best? Maybe. So we try to, the thought we had was to think of it like people think about like income distribution or tax distribution, like break it up into quintiles. So the top quintile by ACV, or excuse me, by company size are the high growth companies, right? So if you're a $5 million company, you're growing at 400%, maybe that's the top quintile. So that's your high growth. And if you're a $5 million company and you're growing at 6%, that puts you in the bottom quintile. That's a laggard. And then mid-range is just those middle three. So really what we try to do is see if they're doing are they doing anything differently? And B, is what is the results they're mathematically, is the results they're seeing significant? Like, is it just interesting, or is the math actually supporting that this is something significantly different so that we can extrapolate from?
Which is key, because then you can really start to make those inferences as to what high growth companies are doing relative to their laggard peers.
Right. And I'm actually, we're doing something now a little interesting behind the scenes. We're saying, okay, for this band of company at this revenue band, so that's maybe 100 rows or 50 rows, what is the average pipeline per SDR? And then who's in the top quintile there? And how do they compare to the bottom quintile or the bottom four quintile? So that's something we're actually playing with now, saying like for people who look just like you, Matt, you know, right-handed people from Massachusetts, what's a top quintile Matt look like versus a bottom quintile Matt look like?
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So we're working on that. And it's a little more math. And it's the thing is you have to test everything to make sure what you're saying is significant. Because like, if you're like, well, 21% do this and 19% do that, great. But that's not statistically significant. It could be noise.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a survey respondent that maybe wasn't.
Yes.
Like data, one outlier can skew the whole.
Yeah. Which is why we talk a lot about medians, because that's a real thing, right? Fat fingering, quickly reading the response. Like if somebody says their SDR's OTE is 250, could be correct. Absolutely. Or let's say they say their variable is 250. Seems unlikely, but it's possible. So that could be 25, or they could, I don't know, be thinking Lira or something. You know what I mean? They didn't say where they said they're a US-based company, but they think in a different currency. So that's why we really like median. So it doesn't throw everything, because you can get a lot. It's like that. My favorite joke is like Warren Buffett walks into a bar. Everybody's a billionaire on average. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, yes, so true. But the median person is no richer when he walks in the bar.
That's right. I love that. That's a good joke, actually. Math circles that kills.
Yeah, man, totally. Yeah.
Perfect segue then as a setup. And in the report, you know, kind of like the first section is really around how companies are structuring their SDR teams.
Yes.
And so what are some of the findings there around, you know, kind of like the lay of the land?
Sure. So the first is kind of what has always been is that outbound teams are more prevalent than inbound teams, because any company can decide to go outbound. It's very difficult to decide to go inbound with enough volume that you wouldn't just give them to your AEs. You'd want an actual team to do some qualification on the front end. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. Hybrid teams, those who do that single, both motions, inbound qualification and outbound prospecting, are like half of groups, which makes sense. So there's varying degrees of inbound. It's not enough to stand to make a discrete function. So you'll stand that up and have folks own both roles. But more and more, we see specialized groups where there's a dividing line between the inbound qualification team at my company and the outbound prospecting team. They're different folks. And again, that's much more common at 50 plus million in revenue. You need that marketing volume to sustain the team. You know, it can't be, if you have 10 reps and 10%, you're not going to have one rep team. You just say, All right, everybody gets inbound and everybody works hybrid. So you have to be at some level of scale to specialize. But it's more and more common because, one, operationally, it's the metrics are different, as you imagine. Like it's different. If my lead volume's down, does my quota go down? If I'm outbound, no, right? So it's slightly different. And B, the natural tendency to call an inbound lead one extra time versus a brand new outbound lead at all. Like it's just it's like the barrier to calling somebody who might cuss you out is much, much higher than calling that inbound lead one more time.
True that.
Yeah.
And kind of the next segue, I think, is the majority of these teams, whether they're, you know, specialized, hybrid, outbound only, you're finding that they're rolling up to sales leaders more often than not.
Absolutely. There was a period in time, like in the early days, I think 07, 09, that it was probably, if not 50-50, it was slightly edged to marketing.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, this was truly back when they were inside sales reps. So they had a word in front of them that said they weren't part of the sales organization. So marketing owned the function, it makes logical sense. And a lot of companies feel quite strongly about this, that if we're generating demand and they're generating demand, we're on the same team. But since, let's say, the last decade, from a doer of the job perspective, they feel like they're in the sales organization. They have quotas. They have they get paid commission. They want to become AEs. Like these all sound like sales things. So roughly, I mean, let's say you take out those who report to like CEOs or ops or things like that, it's like 60-70% report to sales. And the bigger you go in the company, the more likely they're going to report to sales.
And I think that, you know, comment that you just made around SDRs wanting to become AEs, from an organizational standpoint, I think the idea of an SDR farm system is kind of time-tested, mother approved, if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so also gives for those running in-house SDR teams, I think the rationale to roll everything up to sales.
Right. 100%, unless you have like a marketing leader who like actually really likes the function. Like if I would take anyone in any department, if they like the function, if they like working with this tenure of rep, with the turnover, with the average, like the desire for promotion, if somebody is passionate about that, give them the football.
I would agree with that too. Especially if you can, SDR work is hard.
Yeah.
We've said on this podcast a million times, just how hard it is and acknowledge that. 5 Ways to Sunday. That said, when you can have somebody who's passionate about the craft of sales development, it shines through and it carries its own motivation, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are marketing leaders who actually like these reps. There we go, right? Yeah, they exist and they're amazing. So
raise his hand.
Let people do it. And there are, as you know, there's VP of sales who don't want anything to do with the function. They don't want to think about it. So, So they'll have a team lead run it and ignore it. And that's all. That's not great.
Yeah. Yeah. Necessary evil thinking is probably not in anyone's best interest.
Right. Right.
Which also, you know, kind of leads to a discussion around you've asked a series of questions in the survey around SDR to AE ratios. Curious if there's any insights that popped off the page or popped off the surveys for you around those particular structures.
Sure. So it's back in the day, ratio when the role was less common, you wouldn't be surprised to see 3.5-4 AEs being supported by a single SDR, which is kind of, you're spread pretty thin. And then over time, and probably the last 5-10 years, it's been relatively consistent around 1 SDR to 2.3. So just under 2.5 AEs. So two SDRs would give you 5 AEs. That's the rough ratio.
Gotcha.
There was a big push for a long time to have 1-to-1 ratios.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw that take off and I never saw it sustained over a certain revenue level because it gets really expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking like that's big dollar. Well, the era of big burn rates is paused. I'm hesitant to say anything's over, but it's retreating now. And I think the 1-to-1 ratio would see that. But and we could talk about quotas later, but we've seen quotas go down and versus the 2020 report or 2021 report, 2023 report, the quotas have gone down and they've gone down pretty sharply. But what that means when the ratio has stayed the same is the AEs are getting like a significantly fewer meetings per month, like a meeting and a half per AE per month. That adds up. You feel that as an AE.
Yep. Yeah. Any sales leaders listening to this too also are able to probably put themselves immediately into the shoes of the AE, because majority of them were
right
at for one point in time, and kind of do that math in your head.
Yeah, it definitely adds up. But I mean, it's the nature of, I don't even know what we're calling it now. Capital efficient growth.
Yeah.
Smart growth. Who knows? That's just the inning we're in.
For sure. And, you know, for posterity's sake, we're recording this right at the start of Q2 in 2023, which, you know, we've seen so many interesting events, especially that are directly affecting the B2B SaaS or tech space. Not the least of which are what a lot of people are calling the tech recession, a lot of the tech layoffs that have happened, and of course the collapse of SVB, which profoundly impacted the venture community.
For sure.
So yeah, happy times.
I mean, it is the curse of living in interesting times.
For sure. And speaking of which, like this is a perfect place to jump to next. Because you've got a lot of really interesting data on the nature of the SDR role. Mm-hmm. So when they're hired, their ramp, and even retention rates. And I'd love to kind of crack into that part of the survey now, if possible.
Sure.
Largely because what we've seen, and this is the beauty of you running the survey since 07 and us having like so much kind of like of the same questions asked of similar companies over periods of time where you can study what's happening. And the big headline for me is since 2010, you guys have seen a 60% fall in experience when hiring SDRs.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was an SDR. I mean, as we all were, it was an entree for many people into sales. I had worked for Marriott for 5 or 6 years, 4 years, 5 years. So I was a 27-year-old SDR.
Seasoned.
Yeah, right. Yes. And I was the youngest one on the team.
Wow.
It was not uncommon. We actually just did a sub version of the survey for the Israeli market. I have a friend in Israel who's a director of sales development there. And all their SDRs are early career, but older because of military service. So everything's a little different, but it's the ages of the SDRs there were like the ages of the SDRs back in 2010 in the United States. So yeah. So now it's, I mean, how it is. It's often the first real job. It's the first LinkedIn job. You know what I mean? Like everyone has jobs, but something you'd actually put as your first job on LinkedIn would be your SDR job. So we're talking, it's not uncommon for a year of professional experience. And that's professional is a stretch. And that's with people hiring experienced SDRs. Like we, like Salesforce can be choosy. They're an easy one. You have to have been an SDR somewhere else for 12 months. So they're pulling the average up, but there aren't that many of them. So like 6 months to 12 months of any professional experience is kind of what an SDR profile can be now.
What really strikes me, digging below in your graphics help, and by the way, we will in the show notes make available the links to download the report and you can kind of go through it yourself and see all this really, really good research. But in addition to like the average now being at 1 year of experience when an SDR is hired, the main drivers of that seem to be the complete disappearance of SDRs with 3 or more years experience.
Yes, 100%. I mean, it's gone from, let's say it was 25%. Or let's say 20%, and it's gone to 1%, 1.5%. So it's just, there are people who don't like SDR lifers. Like it's used kind of like a pejorative, which to me is, if someone enjoys every month being quarter end, that's good for them. That's a tough job. And if you want to do it for the rest, for a long time, you're tougher than me. And I would never, ever think ill of you, but it's just not common.
Yeah.
And it's especially not common if that's your like floor for your requirement, your minimum requirement. That's, you're not going to get a lot of candidates that pass that bar.
And so you get the reality that we're staring in the face right now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I just saw on Reddit on the r/sales, the subreddit, someone, a commenter that was actually, it was thought provoking. It was just say June, 2022, the highest number of BDRs that will be in the country for a while. Was that like the ATH, the all-time high? Are we going to have a 2 year until we get back to that number? It's an interesting thought.
I think that commenter is probably onto something.
Yeah, for sure.
I think there's a lot of other factors that you'll probably trap in future surveys that are just changing the face of the SDR profession, not the least of which, are AI tools.
Yeah.
That will, you know, probably fundamentally reshape a lot of the work.
It's going to be interesting for sure. I mean, it's like sales engagement tools. Did they change the role that much? They certainly made the job easier.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly made sending emails without looking at them much easier. And that required the use of multiple outbound domains or burner domains.
Yeah.
And that required the use of warm-up tools. And now Google says no to that. So there's like, there's the joke that, you know, we ruin everything we find, like local presence.
Marketers.
Yeah. No, salespeople too, local presence. Does anyone trust the number from their area go they don't know anymore? I mean, that I remember local presence used to see 200-300% connect rate increase.
Yeah.
Just by using that local area code. And now it's like, no, I don't know that number. They're not really here. You just, nobody picks that up.
Right.
So now there's the talk about like branded. You want, when you call my cell phone, you want to say you're the company. You don't want to pretend to be a local number. You want to say who you are. So I don't think you're some IRS, you know, they're going to arrest you, spammer.
Or yeah, or as Apple is fond of doing, spam risk likely.
Yes, right. The kiss of death. Yeah. It's call crazy that spam has gone to phones now. Like the concept of spam has gone from just email to text and phone. Yeah, it's really something.
For sure. Well, and what that's also led to, you know, we contrast this point of SDRs on average getting hired with only a year's worth of experience. Mm-hmm. And then the upper out scenario revealed by your surveys is that they're spending 1.4 years on average in the role.
In the role, right. Because there's ramp time has just generally always been 3 months. It's like plus or minus. It's like the true constant in all the report. It just takes 3 months to ramp someone, or people think it takes 3 months to ramp.
Yeah.
But tenure is falling. And if tenure is falling and the ramp is not also correspondingly falling, then the productive time in seat has to fall too.
Yeah.
So it's and one other thing, we haven't released this yet, but back in post-COVID, so not the shutdown period, kind of the post-COVID expansion, the tech renaissance that happened Q3, Q4, 2020 to 2021, mm-hmm. I took a look at 100 SDRs or 200 SDRs that were in SDR seats in March of 2019. And then I looked at their careers, who got promoted. And if they got promoted to an AE, were they still an AE 6 months later at that same company? Like, to me, that's a good proxy for success.
Sure.
And like 15 months was roughly the median promotion timeframe. Some longer, obviously, some get promoted, small companies or quickly growing companies, 3 months is not unfamiliar. And I did a similar exercise for reps who were SDRs in March of 2021. So basically two years later, a new class. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you now, it's not 14 months. It's 19 months. And that's with most of them still as SDRs. So they haven't even been promoted yet to pull the median up. So the time in, not necessarily in seat per company, but in role globally is up.
Mm.
And I think that has a lot to do with the pace of hiring, right? Like the layoffs do everything. They bring more talent. So there's now more enterprise sellers who take enterprise jobs, which leave mid-market sellers not going up, SMB sellers not going up, and SDRs not going up.
It's almost like it's almost like a funnel, right? Like
right.
Everything kind of breaks its way down.
Right. I mean,
and finds its level.
For sure. We are not, I can tell you right now by looking at LinkedIn job posts, we're not at April 2020 or March or May 2020 levels on, like at LinkedIn SDR job posts in May 2020 could have 500, 600 applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like up from 50 in January 2020. It was unbelievable. We're not there, but we're at 200. I'm seeing posts that are a month old, remote posts that have 200 applicants.
Mm.
So there's a lot of people who are either want to become SDRs, want to be an SDR someplace else, or are nervous about their company's future, right? So maybe I should apply someplace else just in case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And my guess is going back to your yet to be released study on the medium promo, you're probably going to see a huge band of folks that are still in the same role in 2025.
Yes. Yeah. I would not be surprised if we were in excess of 2 years.
Yeah.
And the purpose of that research was about what happens when you promote early versus promote. What happens if you promote at 6 months, at 12 months, at 18 months? Does it have an impact for the rep on their success in their first AE role? And the answer was yes. I mean, yes. 18 months is, to me, and the data say that someone who has been in the SDR role 18 months has a higher likelihood of succeeding as an AE than someone who's been in the SDR role for 8 months or 6 months or 4 months.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast.
And it's almost a perfect bell curve too in the survey around SDR to AE promotion, where, you know, almost unheard of on the left end of the bell to get a promotion in less than 6 months. The vast majority of folks are in that 12 to 23 months. So it would definitely be consistent and congruent with that 18 month portion. And then if you've been in the role for 3 years or more, 36 months plus, very rare to get a promotion. It's almost like you're a lifetime SDR at that point.
or that company is just not going to promote SDRs to AEs. You're going to, if you want to make the step, it's going to have to be at a different logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something I wish we had been tracking back in 2018, because we track involuntary turnover to the rep, involuntary termination, voluntary quits, and promotions. And we didn't track it in 2018, but not surprisingly, the 2020 data versus 2022 promotions are way down. It's just like you said, there's no room in the inn above me. You know, there's right. a lot of people kind of shuffling above, but there's not a lot of room to come up and take a seat.
Go ahead.
I was going to say like you could see on the application side, involuntary turnover is way down.
Yeah.
Actually, I was just looking at some BLS data earlier. I have it up, and quits is what we look at. And information is kind of the larger category for tech. It has a lot of other weird things in, like movie studios, but it also has tech. The quit rate was exceedingly high in all of 2021 through the first 7 or 8 months of 2022. All-time high quit rates, 2%. That's high. I mean, we have a huge economy. There's a lot of churn, but 2% per month is a big, big churn rate. And then in October, November, December, it just fell off a cliff. I mean, layoffs also rose at that same point in time. So there's a little bit of, people are smart. You know, if you hear of your friends being laid off, maybe now is not the time to jump ship to a company you don't know, where you're the bottom person, the lowest tenure.
Yep.
So we're still seeing that. And they're always 2 months behind. February's data just came out, and the quit rate is still where it was, you know, 1.5%, way down. And then layoffs have spiked a little. I mean, October, November, December, January, February, the news stories can't be wrong. I mean, layoff rates are high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a crazy world. Well, and that gives rise to, you know, what SDRs are doing when they're in the job.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I felt like the report really shines in kind of like picking the survey responses from the respondents and their own individual organizations and structures and activity levels, and
right.
giving a more global view of, well, what is everybody else doing?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I so love the report for this. So give us a sense of kind of like an average SDR daily activities, what that picture looks like.
So I would say total activities, and this can include any, it could be steps in a sequence cadence or things I do in a given day, roughly 100 activities. So let's say 40% phone, 40% dials. And that could be leave a voicemail 80% of the time, 100% of the time, 50% of the time, whatever that is. 40% email, traditional email, sending to @blahblah.com. And then 20% other. SMS is not as big as I thought it would be by this point. It's the average is only 2, which basically means a bunch of people use it a lot, and the majority of people use it zero per day. And then LinkedIn makes up the difference.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, there's always like, all this advice for LinkedIn, do voice drops, do videos, do all, but it's like, if I'm 100 connection first time SDR, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough to have somebody be willing to connect with me. And number one, they see my picture and they're like, that's an infant. That's not my nephew's age. It's like my nephew's kid's age sometimes with some of these pictures. But yeah, I mean, that's 100 activities a day is a good number. There's tools that can make that much easier. Sales engagement for sure, but a lot of the, I don't even know if we call them predictive dialing anymore, parallel dialing, a lot of those tools. Click to dial alone was something that did not exist when I was in SDR.
Yeah.
I manually dialed every single number.
And there's too much power behind a lot of those tools.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not going to lie.
Yeah. So the corresponding part is with all that activity, 100 sounds like a lot, but if you say 40 dials, 40 emails, and 20 other, it's manageable. In 7.5 hour day, if we're worried about overtime, that's the big change. Is what do I get? We call them quality conversations. I think we stole this from someone much smarter than me. But basically, it's a conversation or a response to an email. We learn one piece of qualifying or disqualifying information. So it's not, no, I don't take cold calls. Like, you haven't learned anything there.
Mm-hmm.
It's no, we just bought your competitor. Boom, hang up. Something like that.
Yeah.
Or they just left. That's not my job. You've learned something about that person there. So today, the average is 3.6 quality conversations per rep per day. 3.6. Yeah. 100 activities, 3.6. Not a lot. You're like, well, ever thus. But it wasn't ever thus. It was 8 back in 2014. I mean, it's basically been linear. And the thought would be, oh, it must be COVID, work from home, cell phones, no more office lines. But the trend was starting way before COVID. COVID was the accelerator.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, everyone who's been doing this for a while knows it's harder. It's harder to get someone to want to engage with someone they don't know. And there's a million ways, like you said, there's a million ways that technology or habit or custom can prevent them from picking up the phone. Like, people who pick up the phone are saints. They're great. Hmm. People who pick up the phone and say, okay, what do you got for me? Are the best people on the earth. They're the salt of the earth.
They're also harder. I'm one of those people.
Oh, yeah. Are you harder on the rep?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, at least they're learning something and they're having a conversation. They're better than they were if you had just said, send a voicemail.
Yes, that is true. I'm not sure what the number was of activities average a decade ago in the 2014 study, but that's the one you're referencing, 8 quality conversations per day. For what it's worth, the graph basically every other year moves from 8 to 5.8 to 5.1 to 4.4 to 3.6.
Right.
If you were to translate those into percentages, we're basically at a 3.5% now, current reality of the survey respondents. Was it even higher than 8% because of lower activity levels a decade ago?
It's an excellent question. Yes, is the short answer. I think all these LinkedIn and SMS touches have not increased the average. They've just taken away from phones. So maybe it was 50-50 before, or even 60-40, 60 dials, 40 emails.
Right.
So I don't think 100 is, maybe because it's round, maybe because it's feasible. 100 just been the number.
Well, and the phone is binary too, because if you do get a call connect, the chances are really good that the sequence ends right there.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yep.
Positive or negative.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Or neutral for referral sake.
For sure. For sure.
Not the right person.
And then email now, it's the beauty and the danger of these sales engagement tools is the ability to send a lot of emails that not even send, to have sent on your behalf a lot of emails.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a play. I mean, I don't know how you feel about personalization or customization. There's a lot of cool things you can do with AI and tools and your brain. I think some is good. I think it's like a diminishing returns.
Yeah.
None is not great. Some is excellent, and too much is too much.
What I really appreciated about tools coming on the scene with regards to personalization in particular is a lot of the tools are actually very good at harvesting information and producing what I'll steal words from Beck Holland, who likes to call this a tie back. When you're doing a personalization run, if you're just, you know, like I got a bunch of these myself, right? Like I'm a San Diego State undergrad, you know, alumni.
Yep.
So I got the Go Aztecs. Now let me tell you about my video, you know, services. Like, what?
Yes.
No tie back. You know what
Not
I mean?
Not at all. Like, right.
So it, like, there's gradations of personalization. And at any rate, the tools I found are pretty good at harvesting information for the specific use of getting tie backs right into the value proposition or why you're
absolutely
writing.
Right. Absolutely. So in 2000. Maybe 5 or 6, I took Jeff Hoffman's Why You, Why You Now training, and I was in SDR, and that stuck with me ever since. Like, because his pieces of like, hey, Matt, I saw you were on the Enterprise Sales Development podcast. That's why, like, and so that's why me, I thought I'd reach out because you said this, and then tie back. He called it Why You Now. And then right into the value. It makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, it does.
One quick story, if you give me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm a huge Liverpool Football Club fan. In the Premier League, and Mo Salah is my favorite player. He's amazing. One of the best players ever.
Yeah,
and
he really is.
So there are songs sung about him every week, as they should be. But I saw the best, a rep sent me the absolute best email. talking about first touch. It was like first touch attribution and Mo Salah's first touch. And it was, I know you're a Liverpool fan, Mo Salah, first touch attribution is important. It was absolutely gorgeous. And I replied, no, thank you. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't in the market. It's like, yeah, great email. I read it, loved it. Personalization, 10 out of 10. But timing, luck, relevancy, 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's like, that's always the risk, right? Like, you're, amazing doesn't mean amazing results. But I definitely, and I don't remember the company name or the rep's name. So, but I remember the fact that the email was sent.
Well, and you know, if I add my own color to and spin to that exact type of anecdote, what I would also say is, this is probably the hardest skill to teach a junior employee, especially one with next to no experience in the business world.
For sure. It's
just like, you know, especially if you're reaching out in a C-suite, like, you know, people that generally are starved for time anyways, overscheduled by default, a lot of folks wanting their attention. These are highly, you know, targeted and therefore very saturated individuals.
Right.
And so getting personalization right is hard.
Yeah.
It really is. That said, when it's done well, even your example, I think, proves the point. You probably felt compelled to give that person at least a response, as opposed to the crickets that would otherwise be the case in the survey, where 104 activities lead to 3.6 results,
right?
Or quality conversations,
right? And they're going to do another 10 touches on me for no reason,
right?
Because they had this personalization, I can say right away, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
For sure.
I guess my point is that the real enemy of the SDR and the quality conversation, if that is the goal, and I think it is, engagement is the goal in every outreach attempt. You know, you're talking about 100 on average. Ships passing in the night,
never
to reach port.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it's so fun. I mean, interesting what you all as science see, but a lot of the majority of the teams we work with, when we dig into the majority of the times you ask the reps, they'll say, my emails are amazing. My sequences, cadences are amazing. I have a crazy response rate. But when you look at the last touch that booked the meeting, lo and behold, it's the phone.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know why that's the case, but I've seen it too many times for it to be, it's not a one-off.
Yeah. Oh, it's not coincidence. The answer is a simple one. And every marketer alive knows it, whether they know it or not. And that's familiarity and awareness are any brand's best friend. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let's be honest, most SDR outreach is from companies that are not necessarily household names, or the product or service that is being represented is not immediately on the short list and dominant in front of mind to whomever you're reaching out to.
For sure.
That's kind of the point of SDRs.
Right.
So the bigger kind of like takeaway is like, hey, raising awareness is part of this motion, whether I want it to be or not.
Right.
And so when you're sending email after email, or potentially we love to integrate the ads channel.
Yeah, that's very smart.
LinkedIn is a great place for raising awareness along these lines. But then the phone, again, being this binary medium where once you do get a call connect, sequence usually stops right there. That ends up being kind of, to your point about last touch attribution, I think that's the key.
Right. It's never the first call. And the call, it's never, even if it was 100, well, some companies do only call, but still.
Yeah.
Every display ad, every LinkedIn touch, every comment, every email is adding to. It's all added or accretive. There's value there. And a lot of the time, even if they're going to tell you no, that third voicemail is what's going to get them to reply no to your other email, because you're putting in the effort. You're not drive-by emailing.
That is so true. And, you know, this leads us to kind of like, what I feel is maybe some of the most important benchmarking stats that you reveal to the world. And that is, well, what is the rest of, you know, the survey respondents, what are they seeing as far as monthly quotas are concerned?
Sure. Absolutely. So one pre-piece is we ask people to identify what their model is. And we use three buckets, and then we ask them their qualification levels, and then I clean it up because people call things different things. So I ask them what they call it, then I ask them some deeper questions, and then I overwrite what they call it based on what they answered. The old express versus revealed preference. So Introductory meetings, which are just what they say. They're introductory meetings. They, you know, in the old days, you used to call them fog the mirror. Is the person exhaling? We will take the meeting. Then semi-qualified opportunities, which are they aren't banned, but there's something there. They've passed some threshold. Do you use this technology? Are you responsible for this? Is this something you would do? Thus and so. And then fully qualified are truly like the good stuff, the good meetings, where your reps, for whatever reason, are so busy that they can't take extra meetings. They can only take stuff that is ready to go and is willing to convert from that first meeting to stage one pipeline at like 70-80%, something that's really, really ready to go. So I always said forever, if somebody asked me, what's the number? I would say fully qualified, I don't know, 10 meetings, 11, 10 meetings per SDR per month. And now it's 9, which is fewer. And for a long time, introductory meetings, I'd say maybe 16, 18. Now it's 14. And semi-qualified is right in the middle. So the conversion rates haven't actually broken down that much. They're right in that right range of an introductory meeting could be 45% convert to the next stage, could be 55%. Fully qualified could be 72%, could be 82%. But the people's quotas have right-sized in the second half of last year. I think our survey data ran through, let's say, January of 2023. So people right-sized their quotas coming into 2023.
Yeah.
Which is, it's important. Like, it's a hard enough job without having an unattainable target. I think that's huge. But the follow-on piece is the pipe. Like, if the number of meetings quota has gone down, I doubt the ACV has increased by a corresponding percentage, which basically means the pipeline per SDR per head or per SDR has fallen.
Yep.
Which then you get to the stress of the unit economics if people are worried about burning cash.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard decisions, I think, in the SDR space that this really gives cold, hard, left brain facts to.
It's never been an easy job, but there are times where it has been like you had a tailwind, or at least you haven't had a headwind. It feels like a little bit there's a headwind now. Maybe not a little bit, maybe a lot, but it depends on your industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we also infer that when talking about past meetings and converted meetings, that there's the obvious, was the meeting even held?
Because yeah,
it can't
of course.
Be converted if it wasn't held.
Of course.
But also, you know, I often think about when I read this survey, fully qualified opportunities, that is, you call those the good stuff. I think of that as like, wow, this is going to be the hardest. It's taking the SDR job from the hard to the impossible.
Yes. Yes. So fully qualified within reason. So whatever's one step between hard and impossible, really sure. Hard. Right. Because there are groups that have tried to stand up. I mean, basically MedPIC. I want a MedPIC meeting and forget it. No, I mean, that's.
Yeah. That's give me a BANT meeting, please.
The BANT plus everything. Plus, you know, their social security number.
Good luck with, just to editorialize a little bit, like good luck with your average 21-year-old, like crossing the bridge of authority with a 42-year-old right. CFO.
I mean, if somebody asked me, well, do you have authority? I'd be like, I don't know. Should I? What do you think? Yeah. It's like, no, man, we're trying to get to know each other here. Stop with that's too personal a question. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. I mean, and you know, just from my own peers, especially in the CMO suite, because marketing gets saturated a lot.
I cannot imagine. Yeah.
You know, we have groups and we have, you know, banter and a lot of other channels where SDRs like trying to qualify, like, oh, beware.
Yeah.
Hell hath no fury.
Yeah, I know.
Because most sophisticated executives have bought a thing or two in the past and do not whatsoever appreciate the power imbalance that really comes from a qualification run done poorly.
Right. Especially if you've already said yes.
Yeah.
And they keep asking questions to try to get to know, then it's like, I understand it. Everyone's trying to maximize the efficient use of their time, but sometimes just take yes.
Yeah.
Just take yes as an answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great, great point. Well, I think that this is actually a really appropriate cut point.
Great.
Largely because we got through like not even half of the survey. So I want to paint the picture for the listeners out there that maybe I can even recruit Matt for a part two where we dissect other parts of the report if he's so willing. But this has been absolutely fantastic to get the color, context, and even flavor of what, again, it, for my money, it's the best report in our space, bar none, authoritative and informative every year you do it.
I appreciate it so much. It's like we were talking earlier. It's something that I work on, I put it out there, and then I move on to the next task. So I like to hear that people actually consume it. It's amazing. It's why I like my job. We try to put useful things out there for people who want to be our clients and people who won't ever be our clients. I hope everyone who reads this gets some value.
Speaking of which, for our listeners out there that may want to engage with the Bridge Group or yourself, Matt, mm-hmm. where should they go?
Sure. If you want to hit me up, like if you have specific questions, I love answering on page 57. What does this mean? Just come to me. LinkedIn, Matt Bertuzzi. Bertuzzi like the hockey player, Matt like M-A-T-T. Otherwise, if you have questions for us, you want to talk to one of our partners, Bridge Group Inc. is the website, or you can just Google Matt Bertuzzi sales SDR and you'll find us there.
That is wonderful. What a great discussion this has been. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate it.